Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Coach Ahern, welcome to the Coach and Coordinator Show.
Thanks, Keith. Glad to be with you.
Coach, we're happy to have you here, and we're going to get started. We're going to go all the way back to the beginning for you. What made you want to be a football coach?
Oh, you know, it is a long way back. I think it's really weird. When I first went to college, my first goal, I was thinking about going into law, and I shadowed a lawyer, and I thought, wow, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. So then I decided I was going to go into medicine, and I think like all young kids going to college, you're not really sure. And it's really weird. I was sitting in my dorm, and I had the window open. It was, you know, during football season, and I heard noise like a football game, and I sort of walked to it, and I said, maybe this is what I want to do. That sounds weird, but I think that's really when I changed my mind. I realized how much I had missed it from playing, and decided I was going to get back into it. So that's how I got into deciding that's what I wanted to do.
Where'd you get your start in coaching?
Senior year, when I was at Western Michigan, Dick Soyson was the head coach at Kalamazoo Hackett. And he had actually coached, I'm from Owosso, Michigan originally, and he had been the high school coach there. He actually coached a couple of my brothers. And I thought if I was going to get into this, that maybe I should get some experience and ask him if I could, you know, volunteer with him and get some experience with him. And that's where I started, was at Kalamazoo Hackett in Michigan. And then after I graduated, I had a couple different offers, and I ended up in a small town in the Thelma, Michigan, at North Branch as an assistant. And I should mention, it was really kind of interesting. Both of the coaches, Dick Soyson and then the coach at North Branch was Don Smesnick. Both of those guys were Hall of Fame coaches. And so they'd been in the game for a while, and you pick up a lot, you know, just seeing how they do things and stuff. So I learned quite a bit from those two guys. But that's where I went. And then after I was at North Branch, I got the head coaching job at Goebbels, which I was going to work on my master's. And that's right. Goebbels is a small city outside of Kalamazoo, and I wanted to get my master's in counseling at Western because they were one of the top counseling schools in the Midwest at that time. So I was there. And then after there, I went left and went to Ithaca. And I was there a long time at Ithaca. I started coaching there, and I got there in 1972, and I coached through the 2003 season. And I got a crazy thing. That's where I met Dub Maddox and some of the other guys that we had talked about before coming on air. Went to Florida. I had to do that over again. I'm not sure I went that route. Mm-hmm. And then I came back from Florida, and I've been at Lansing Catholic since 2009.
And if I do the math right, Coach, you've been coaching for, is it 50 years?
I think 49. I think next year will be the 50th year. I started in 1967.
Okay.
So what would that be? I think 49, I think, yeah.
So
kind of crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Looking back at your career, what are some key points in your learning and your development as a coach? You know, some of the key things you learned that made an impact on you.
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, I think working with both Dick Soyson and Don Smesnick, I picked up a lot early from them. I'll be honest with you, probably when I got the head job at Goebbels, I'm not sure I was really ready for it. I took a lot of the stuff that I had learned from those guys. I think anytime you work with somebody else, there's some things you definitely want to do that they do. And then there's also some things that they do, I don't want to do it that way. So you learn from them that way. And everything's not always positive. Sometimes there's some things you learn that you make sure you don't want to do. But I think that they had a big influence on my early coaching and how I handled the team and how we organized and that. That's probably where my, and like I said, I think I probably got my first head coaching job was actually, I'd only had the assistant for the volunteer at Hackett and then the 1 year at North Branch. So I probably really wasn't ready for a head coaching job. So I sort of learned on the go. I remember our first game. We were ahead, and we ended up losing. I remember we lost our first game 20-18, and it was strictly because of special teams. I'd never really spent any time on special teams. We gave up two big plays on special teams, one right at the end of the game that cost us the ball game. So you sort of learn as you go, and I got and sort of jumped in the fire maybe too early, but I learned a lot, I think, when I was at Goebbels also.
So, Coach, over your career, what's developed into your overall philosophy and running a program?
One of the things that I didn't do very well early, I think you have to learn to delegate. It's just too hard. I thought I could do everything by myself, but you have to be able to delegate some things. I think that's something that I've really improved on. And I think your philosophy of offense and defense, that sort of changes over time a little bit. I think you've got some things that you like to do and that you can work into your schemes and stuff. But I think that sort of develops over time and what you feel most comfortable with, what you feel you know. I'm not sure if that really answers that question.
Yeah,
or not,
sure.
But.
Sure. And as you look at it, Coach, looking at your career, you've had a chance to build a lot of teams. What are some of those key things you've done to build a team, to build a culture in a team?
Yeah, that's really important. Both places that I took over, like when I came to Ithaca, I think what you have to do is sometimes have to change the culture, because you don't usually get a job where things are really good when you come into it. And I think a big thing you have to do is sort of change the culture. You got to get the kids and actually the community to buy in what you're doing. You sort of like a salesman at times in trying to get everybody on the same page. You have to get all the assistant coaches also on the same page. And it's a little bit different in high school. You don't necessarily go out and pick your whole staff how you want. A lot of times there's guys that have been at a place for a long time and haven't done things the way you want to do them, so you have to get them to buy in. And so changing the culture is a big thing. I heard a coach at a clinic say there's like three phases of a program, and I really believe it now that I've been in some of these. I think when you first come into a program, when they haven't been winning, they just hope they can win. The kids kind of hope, hey, maybe we can win a game type thing. And as you progress a little bit, I think they get into where they get where I think I can win. I think we can win this game type thing. And then after you really get established, then they just expect to win. I think there's those stages happen. Sometimes they happen quicker at one place than they will another. But I think it's sort of a gradual thing where the culture changes, where the work ethic and all the things that are involved in a program will change over time. But I think a big thing is getting everybody to buy into it.
Coach, after you get that program going and you have that buy-in and things are starting to be successful, what are the keys to keeping that consistency year in and year out?
That's the hard part, I really think. Sometimes it's not so hard to change something, but when you get where you're successful, a lot of times kids will just think it's almost like an entitlement. We're supposed to win and we're going to win type thing without working for it. So I think that the key thing there is to get the kids to realize that how you got there in the first place was through hard work and that they have to continue that to be successful. That reaching the mountaintop is sometimes easier than staying on top of it. So getting the kids to continue to work hard to maintain it is a big thing. That's hard to do sometimes. But, one of the things that's helped along those lines in some of the schools I've been in is the older kids, after they've graduated, actually this time of the year, the seniors will help the younger kids, the upcoming juniors and senior, or the upcoming juniors and sophomores and freshmen, like in the weight room and some of the off season stuff, where they show them how important it is, and they actually come back in and still continue to work with them. That's one of the things you can get when you get to that point where the kids are pushing the kids each other. That's a big step in getting to maintain where you're at.
Coach, obviously, teaching on the field or in the classroom is an important part of success on the field as well. What are some of the best things that you and your staff do to teach your players?
Well, one of the things I always, when I get to a school and after you're established, is I think it's real important that You're not screamers and yellers. I don't like getting screamed at, and I know kids don't like getting screamed at. I don't think you teach that way, and you don't teach that way in a classroom, and you know, not cursing and that type of thing. I think it's real important that you actually teach, not scream and yell. I don't think you're really teaching them anything if you do that. So how you approach the kids, treat them with a lot of respect, and then that respect gets returned. I think one of the things that we've done as a staff is a little unique for high school, but I started to do it towards about the middle of the time that I was at Ithaca, probably in the mid-'80s, 90s, somewhere in that area, and how we arranged our staff. And the way we practice is that all during the individual time and group time, all the kids are practicing together, 9 through 12. So you have your freshman groups and your JV groups and your varsity groups. And one of the coaches, is an offensive line coach. And if it's an offensive day for varsity, he'll have the varsity offensive line. If it's an offensive day for the freshman JVs, which would be opposite of the varsity, then you'll have the freshman in the JV lines. So we have the same continuity all the way through the high school program. They're hearing the same terms. They're using the same, you know, techniques and everything all the way through from 9 through 12, and that really helps. And it goes down further than that, although it's not the same at the – we have a junior program at the schools that I've been at that usually starts fourth grade. And they run the same schemes that we do. Obviously, at the lower levels, not quite as complex as they are as they get older. But as they get into the high school, those kids already know what we're doing. They know the terminology, and that helps. So it actually starts lower and comes up. But I think for a smaller school, most of the schools I've been at have been 500 or less students. So they're not really big schools. But our staff has been pretty, you know, there's been a lot of continuity in the staff, and so that's been a big part of it, how we've approached it with the kids. I think that's a little bit different. It's more like on a college level how they do it, but
right,
we've tried to do it at the high school level, and that's really helped. That's really made a big difference in the programs.
How do you break things up then for game days for the freshmen and JVs? Are there certain coaches that are designated always as the freshmen, or are there different coaches who go each week?
No, yeah, there'll be – everybody's got an assignment by position, and what we try to do, the freshmen in the will have like one guy that is an offensive guy and one guy's a defensive guy. And we try to have, you know, most of the staff can be at most of those games. Like in Michigan, most of the freshman and sophomore games are the same day. And so the guys that are let's say the freshmen start at 4 o'clock, and then the JVs will be right after them.
Okay.
And so all the people are there. But the way we divide it up is that there'll be an offensive guy that's in charge of calling the plays and the offense on the freshman level and JV level. And there'll be some guys that are in the defensive part will do the defense. And then everybody's there to help. But they get some buy-in that way of being able to run their team and stuff. So I list everybody as an assistant varsity coach, but there's actually guys that do take the freshman teams and the JV teams.
Right. But in terms of coaching the players, they're all varsity coaches. So during the week,
correct,
you know, you're what you designate as a freshman, you know, head coach maybe is also going to be a varsity position coach.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for example, like this year, I use that example, like the one of the backfield coaches that works with the backs was also the head freshman coach, and he did the offense for them. And then the guy that was the defensive guy was the defensive line coach, so he called defense there. So that's how it works. But they're all – I think one of the things that gives the coaches a buy-in, if they're all – like if they just worked with freshmen all the time, I don't know if they buy into the program quite as much as they would. But now they get to work with a varsity player, so they buy more into the program. It's worked out well that way because of that, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good model, and obviously a challenge in today's environment is to get that buy-in, you know, to get those guys who want to spend the time, and I think that's a good model for that. Coach, what do you do to keep it fun for your players? Obviously, the game can be a grind. You know, it's a long season, and you're working hard for those 10 Friday nights. How do you make it fun?
Yeah, that's always a challenge. And sometimes it isn't. And like you said, sometimes it's a grind, and you have to get the kids buy into that a little bit. We tried. I think one of the things that most of the kids that play football are pretty competitive, and so all the things that we try to do at practice are competitive. I think, you know, they enjoy that. We have we're a hurry up, fast tempo team, and that's how we run the practices also. And so they're not real long practices, but most of them, like if you're doing a drill, it'll be something competitive in that drill, and that helps a little bit. Try to break it up so we're not doing the same thing all the time. Different drills will help. We'll try to set up, like in practices, the different situations, not just, you know, doing the same thing all the time, I guess, mm-hmm. one thing. But it's tough. We have the kids do some of the, like if we're going to have a conditioning day, sometimes we let them decide what they want to do, you know, and different, you know, little things. You try to get them to have some say in it and what you're doing as much as you can. But it's a tough sport, and we talk to them a lot about that. After every practice, we have a time where we, you know, as a group, we can come together and talk. And if one of the seniors or one of the upperclassmen want to have something that they want to talk about, you know, we'll do that. So make it more like a, you know, a family situation from that standpoint, I guess. But I think probably change up the different continuity is probably the biggest thing that we do. Try to keep it fun.
Coach, over the 49 years you've been at this, what would you say is you know, some of the biggest changes, but also things that were changes that were good for the game?
Well, I think it's the safest it's ever been right now, and I know that it's a scary thing. I tell the younger guys, I said, if we aren't careful, we're going to lose this game within the next 10 years. It's going to get litigated right out of existence. And I really feel that in all the years that I've been in, I've seen a lot of different changes. The equipment's safer. The techniques are safer. I think the coaches in general have a lot better knowledge of what's, you know, to make the game safer. So I think that's a big thing that I think is really important at this time. But there's been so many changes. I think technology is an amazing thing right now. Stuff that we're doing now wouldn't even have been thought of when I first started coaching. I mean, we were using 16mm
right.
Kodak analyst type doing stuff, and now. Like I just exchanged some stuff with a coach in South Dakota that I had read an article and got a hold of him, and we both are on Huddle. So we just with a click of a button, I've got his game plays, and he's got mine. And I mean, that's unheard of a few years ago. So the technology is really something that has really changed. But I think probably, you know, everything goes sort of full circle. It's really, mm-hmm. it's really funny. We've been a shotgun team for a long time. And I know when we were at Ithaca and we were doing it, and we were running some single wing out of the shotgun, but how the game has sort of come full circle. You know, the coaches in college don't want to call this stuff single wing that they're running right now. But they've got basically, they call them sniffer backs now, but that's used to be the old blocky back and
exactly.
the single wing. I mean, it's funny how things have come full circle that way. But I think the equipment, the improvement in equipment and the improvement in technology are probably some of the biggest changes I think I've seen. I think this, you know, the schemes and all that are different, obviously, but as far as the game itself, I think those are two things that have really improved over the years.
Coach, what have been the keys for you to have this kind of a longevity? I mean, I imagine you've been retired as a teacher for some time now. And,
yeah,
And did you retire at one point?
Yeah, at Ithaca I retired. I still coached there for 3 years after I retired, and then ended up down in Florida. Left Ithaca. If I had to do it all over again, if you're ever going to second guess yourself, I still would have just stayed there. That's where I really still got close ties with that community. I mean, I was there for a little over 30 years and, you know, raised the family there, and still have a lot of good friends there. And it's the funny, the coaching staff there now is the same coaching staff that I had, or their kids that played for me that are on that staff. So we, you know, I'm not, Lansing isn't that far from Ithaca. So we keep in touch, and that's a neat thing too. But after leaving there, I went down, we sort of, to be honest with you, if you talk to Dub about it, he'd tell you the same thing. We kind of got suckered into going to Florida. The coach, that there was a brand new school that was opening there, Palmetto Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
A coach that I had known a long time from Kansas, Mark Bliss, was going to be the head coach there. We had known each other a long time. We always said it'd be kind of fun to coach together. Well, I didn't know if I wanted to pull up roots from Michigan and go to Florida. Well, we went down and talked with the powers that be down there, and kind of were told a story that didn't actually turn out to be, you know, what we were told. And so that was, for the most part, most of the guys left after that first year and went back. I know Mark went back to Kansas. I think he took a job, I think it was at Derby, and then everybody just scattered. Dub went back. Dub Maddox was our receiver coach, and I mean, a great coach. And he went back into Oklahoma, where he was from. And I was going to come back to Michigan, and a new school was opening up just north of where Palmetto Ridge is, down in just north of Palmetto Ridge is in Naples, and there was a school opening up in Lehigh Acres, East Lee County. And they were going to add one class at a time. And I thought that'd be kind of neat. You would sort of have control over the whole program as it started. And it was going to be a big school. You know, they were going to have, they thought, close to 3,000 kids and stuff. And I thought, well, this is going to be kind of neat. So I went there. Well, it was kind of everything that could go wrong went wrong. I think the school was the first year where it was supposed to be done. They got ready to build, and there was actually, just a creek was running through the property. So they said that this was a wetland, so they had to change all the plans of the school. And so the first year we were in what was going to become a elementary school, which was actually a Kmart that they just remodeled into a school. We were in that school with no gym, no locker room, no, we didn't have a place to practice or anything. We would go down to a local park and use the bus as our locker room. Guys were getting dressed behind the bus and stuff. And then the school wasn't completely finished for the second year, so we did the same thing. We could write a book about that experience. I mean, it's a little off what we're talking about, but it was an amazing experience. In my third year, my wife got sick and had cancer, and so I resigned from there. And then thought she was that happened in January. And in June, she was supposedly declared cancer-free. So I worked with one of the coaches that had worked at Palmetto Ridge, was the head coach took a head job at Port St. Lucie, which is on the other side of the state. And I was going to work with him. Started to work with him, and then the cancer returned, and so I left that position too, and I lost my wife that year in 2008. Probably one of the hardest things ever. And then I ended up at Lansing Catholic, where I met now. It was just sort of happened. That's how I ended up at Lansing Catholic. The principal that was there actually did his student teaching when I was at Ithaca. So I knew him from that. And he had ran into a guy that I had coached with. And long story short, he contacted me to come and take over there. So that's how I ended up back into Michigan. So it's been a long cycle of things. But yeah.
Coach, how do you structure your staff as far as the coordinators go? I know we mentioned how you staff, you know, freshman and sophomore football, but are you a coordinator now, or are you do you delegate?
Yeah,
those?
I still do the offense. During practice time, I probably spend most of my time with offense with the backs and receivers, but I have somebody that's at each of those positions. So I'm actually during practice, I roam from the different positions. If I want to see if I think we need to work on something, I'll go with that. But I probably spend most of my time with the offense. Then with based on the experience of one of the coaches that actually was with me in Ithaca is here, and he was my defensive coordinator in Ithaca for probably 20 some years. And he's the defensive coordinator here. And then the other people, we just sort of got to where our strengths were, where the different people, I've always been a line coach type guy. So that was our offensive line coach. I was fortunate. I had some really good people on staff. And it always looks like we have a huge staff here because I think there's like 13 coaches on the program, but almost all of them are volunteer coaches. I think one of the biggest problems, and I know it's not true everywhere, but it's a growing problem. There's not as many coaches that are actually in the school building during the day teaching as there has been in the past. So the reason we have to have so many coaches is that their job a lot of times will interfere, so they can't come to practice. So it looks like you have 13 coaches, but you really don't because they aren't all there. So you'll have I'll have two people at most positions. Like there'll be two offensive line guys, there'll be two defensive line guys and two guys in the secondary. So if somebody can't make it, we still have somebody that's there. But the way we put them in those positions was either that coach had maybe played that position in college and that's where his expertise are and stuff. And then sometimes when you lose one, you don't get exactly what you want. So you have to sort of coach them up and try to do the best you can. But we've been pretty fortunate, guys, especially here at Lansing Catholic right now, they're in positions that they feel really comfortable with and have good experience in.
Coach, if I were to go to a clinic and listen to you speak about your offense, what's something I would take away as being unique to you and obviously something that could help my team?
I think one thing we do probably a little bit different than a lot of schools. I think more schools are doing it now, but I've talked at quite a few clinics on it is our passing game. I've been really fortunate to worked with some kids that have worked real hard at their positions and have went on and been pretty successful quarterbacks in college. And I think we throw the ball probably a little bit more than what a lot of teams do. And so usually when I talk at clinics, we talk about our passing scheme. It's really pretty simple. It looks complex, but it isn't. But one of the things we do is we work a lot with our quarterbacks on reading defenses, and not as complicated maybe as it is at the upper levels. But I don't think we see the complex defenses either that they see. But an easy example for running a curl flat pattern. We'll read the flat defender, and it's like a 2-on-1 fast break in basketball for our kids. Mm-hmm. And we've been really, really lucky the kids that have played have been able to go on and have been successful at the college level at that position. And that's probably what, if you went to the clinic, I'd probably be talking about our passing game, and hopefully you could pick something up on that you could apply to whatever you were doing at your program.
Coach, as we're getting into clinic season now, thinking back on it, what's something you've taken from a coaching clinic and implemented into what you do?
Oh, wow. I've stolen everything I've got. And that sort of changed. When I first started, we were really basically an option team. Bill Yeoman at Houston and Darrell Royal at Texas were sort of starting the Houston Veer and the Wishbone at Texas. And we did a lot of that. I heard those guys speak at clinics, and we went to, in fact, Bill Doolittle was at Western Michigan at that time. He was running the beer. So we, you know, I think every year I still love going to clinics. I think I pick up something every year that I go. A lot of times it just reaffirms what you're doing. These guys are doing that and having success, sort of reaffirms, well, that we're doing the right thing. And then you'll maybe pick up a little thing here or there. Got a couple formations that will fit our, at the clinic that I just had been to a couple weeks ago that are going to fit into our program, what we do. And then we're going to put those in and take advantage of what that forces the defense to do. So you pick something up all the time. I don't think you ever learn all there is about the game. There's always somebody that will come up with something that, that you can use, or you better be alert, because if you're going to have to see it, somebody you're playing is going to use that scheme. So you want to know as much about it as you can. So, yeah, I try to get as many clinics as I can. I don't go as many as I used to, just because there's not as many in Michigan as there used to be. But you can always learn some from clinics. I think going way back to when I started with, and again, that's how it sort of goes full circle. The option stuff there is so similar to the what they call the RPOs, right? Now the run pass options. It's that you trace all that right back to, to the Houston Veer, just about. It's all pretty much the same thing. So but you can learn stuff, and I love the game. I just like to go and I like to hear other coaches what they're doing, and the camaraderie that among coaches. I think that's one thing in football that I don't think is quite as prevalent in some of the other ones. Is like I mentioned earlier, there was a coach in South Dakota that I just called up and doesn't know me from Adam. I don't know him from Adam, but we're doing similar things and said, hey, let's exchange some film where we can learn something. And coaches are more than likely, they're will always do that with you. So it's kind of a neat fraternity in that way.
Yeah, definitely. We are a sharing community for sure. Coach, what's something you're excited to learn about this offseason?
We're spending a little more time on RPOs. We do it a little bit, but I've tried to get to everybody that offensively that was talking about those to see if I can use some of those different than what we were doing. I think the big thing at the high school level is to keep it as simple as you can. You don't want to make it so that it's too complicated for the kids. A lot of times the coaches know what they want to do, but it's complicated to the kids because they don't spend all the time, learning all this stuff. So that was one of the things. And then I also like to go to hear people talk about some of the offenses that we're going to see that we have to stop. A lot of teams in Michigan now are going back to that power T stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to, at the last clinic I was at, there was three teams that were talking about their offense, and they were all power T teams. So I try to, see what they're doing, to see what we have to do to try to stop that too. So, sort of goes both ways. I picked up a few ideas there, and then picked up, some of the things on the RPO and formations and things like that. So those are probably the latest things I've picked up at clinics.
Coach, what's the best coaching book you've read over the years?
Oh, probably my own. Seriously, I'm just kidding, but I did write a book. When we first started running the single wing, there was no books on it. I mean, the ones that had been written rotted circulation. They were so old. So we went. Keith Piper was still alive at that time.
Yep.
And we went down. He was the last college coach to probably run the true single wing. But when we got there, he was running more. I got a lot of his old films, and they're really running the spread stuff that teams are running today. But the running, that's like what we are. I call it, everybody asks what offense I run. We run a spread single wing. Our blocking schemes are really our old single wing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the passing game part of it is different. So that's the reason I wrote the book, was I went with him, and then Ken Kerfel was Keith referred me to him. He was the coach at Lawrenceville in New Jersey, so we talked with him. And Bob Howard was the coach in Iowa, and so I got all the stuff that we did from these different coaches that were coaching the single wing. We still have a yearly get together. It's a national single wing symposium where there's guys all over the United States will get together someplace and they'll express what they're doing and what new things. But that's the reason I wrote the book. There wasn't anything on it. I had no idea where to start or anything. So I took what I got from all those people and tried to put it as simply as I could in a book. And then part of the book is what we do now. More of our spread single wing stuff is in there too. So that obviously would be the best book on the market. I think everybody should get that.
Where can our listeners get that if they're interested?
It's through Coach's Choice if they really want to get it. But there's film on it in the book. But I've got, to pick one book would be really hard. I've got, I bet I've got 100 coaching books. But I think some of the stuff that is really good today, like on the web, where X&O Labs is an unbelievable site. That's really, really good as far as getting out information. Then if you can't get to the clinics, most of them, like the night, they'll have a night clinic manual that will have some of their main speakers. If you pick that up, you can get the talks that are all over the country that you obviously can't get to. And there is so much information out there now. If you have a computer, you can find out just about everything. Then you go to YouTube and you can see it in action. It's, I don't know, pretty soon there probably won't be any books. It'll be on, online and stuff. But those are spots now that I probably spend too much time on. There's just a lot of different sites. Some of them are like, I guess they call them blogs, but they were, they have tremendous information on them, and you can learn a lot. A lot of football on those. So I think if I had to pick one thing right now, I would probably say the X&O Labs on online. If any coach that's listening isn't involved in that's a unbelievably good site. You can get a lot of information on it free if you want to become, I think they call it the insider. I think it only costs something $35 a year, which is unbelievable, the amount of film and stuff that you can get on that. So I'll give them a plug because they've done a lot of work that's very good.
Coach, what advice would you give to that young coach who wants to make it long term in this career?
Make sure your family buys into it. You spend a lot of time. I was really fortunate that that my family did, and they were sort of grew up like around it, and it's the culture. I think that's a big part of it, because I think if you're in a situation where everybody isn't happy in the family, then you're not going to be in it a long time, because it does take some sacrifices. You're giving some stuff up if you're going to be in it a long time. I think if I get one advice to anybody, anybody going into coaching, is to make sure you treat all the kids fairly. That sounds easy to do, but sometimes that star has got to be treated the same way as the guy that's the end of the bench. I think that's really important. And the kids, you can't fool the kids. They know whether or not you're doing that or not. That's extremely important. So, in all the things you do, be fair with your kids, be honest with them. I think it's a tough sport. And kids today, everybody asks me, I've been on some different shows, and they always ask you, are the kids different than they were before? And I said, yeah, they are different. I'm always the devil's advocate. Everybody says, no, they're the same. I don't think kids are the same as they were when I was coaching before. There's so many more things out there right now that they can do instead of football, that are a lot easier. And I hate to say this, but I think a lot of our kids are softer than they used to be, because they just, they don't have to do some of the things that kids, 20 years ago, 30 years ago had to do. And so when you get those kids, those are special kids. If you've got a football team of 35, 36 kids or 40 kids or whatever it happens to be, that are working hard, those are special kids. You got to let them know that they are. I think that's important to get that across to them, because it is a tough physical game, and to prepare for it the way you have to is not easy. And those kids are giving up some things too to be a part of that. So make sure that you treat them all fair, and that you let them know that you love them and that they are special kids. I think that's a big thing.
Coach, what advice do you have about creating balance between, what really can become a grind of a profession, and then all the things that you have to keep important in your life, your family, your health, those types of things?
Yeah, that's hard. I don't do a very good job of it, I don't think. I probably spend too much time. I know I spend an awful lot of time on film, and And during the season, it's, you know, you are away from the family a lot. I mean, it's good if they can be involved in it and enjoy it with you. But there's a fine line there, maybe going overboard and maybe spending too much time on it. That's a tough thing. I think, you know, to be successful in it, you have to put the time in. If you don't, then you're not going to be successful, because it does take a lot of time, a lot of work to get the program to where you want it and to keep it there. Some of the things we talked about earlier. But again, there's a fine line between maybe doing too much of that and neglecting some of the family stuff that is very important too. Yeah, I don't have a good answer for you there. I don't do a very good job of it myself. I know that. I probably go overboard the wrong way.
Well, Coach, we're gonna pick up the tempo here and go into our 2-minute drill. Just some real quick question and answers. So, schematically, what's the toughest defense to face?
You know, it depends a little bit on what our strength is offensively. I know some years, like, we'll play some teams that are play soft coverages and stuff, and then that's really hard. But other years, that's what we want. I think so. It depends a little bit on what your strength is. Like in our passing, the toughest thing is when we're overmatched and teams can play man to man and their men are better than our men and we can't get separation. I would say right now that's probably our biggest concern. So one of the things I try to pick up at clinics are different types of things where we can get separation on our routes and the types of schemes. And then I already mentioned offensively, I hate defense in the power T. In fact, I joke with the guys that run it. I says, I'm going to write to the state association, see if we can get it outlawed, because it causes too many concussions. I mean, it's so physical.
Right.
And it's, I don't think I would like to coach it, because, to be honest with you, I think it's kind of a boring offense. But, man, it's tough to stop. If they're good at it, that's really a tough offense to stop.
What's your favorite goal line play?
Again, it depends on personnel. Probably we'll get into a spread set, and we'll use some motion, which helps the quarterback a little bit on his read. And we'll run sort of like what Clemson ran down at the thing, where it's not really a pick if you're on offense, but it is if you're on defense. So some kind of scrape where we're trying to get a guy free.
Coach, turf or grass?
I'm going to say turf now, because we were really fortunate this last year. At Lansing Catholic really didn't have a home field. We had to play all our games away, and through some, you know, great donations and stuff of some former alumni, we were able to put in a turf field. It's, you know, it's great for games, but for us it was great because now we have a great place to practice. Before it was like a swamp where we had to practice, and so this makes it great. So that all your lines are right, everything, all your landmarks that you need for your different things are right. So I'd have to say turf.
Day game or night game?
Night games. I like those a lot better. I know we have to play here after you get up into the quarterfinals in a state tournament. There are Saturday afternoon games, but I prefer the Friday nights. I think high school is Friday night football. That's high school.
If you had to run your offense from one formation, what would it be?
Oh, it'd be impossible to run what we do. Probably a double set, I would say, probably, with either a tight end, flanker, and slot, or else double slots. Would probably, if I could only have one formation, I'd probably use that.
What's your favorite quote?
Actually, it doesn't have anything to do with football. It's my favorite quote is, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans.
Should the kickoff be eliminated?
No, I don't think so. That'd change the game. I hate kickoffs, to be honest with you. I hate covering them. I like returning them. In high school, it's a huge part of the game if you have a kicker, because they can't return them out of the end zone. In I think Texas is the only state there and where they use college rules where you still can. But in most of the states, if the ball goes in the end zone, that's a huge advantage. if you have that. So I know they say that there's a lot of injuries on kickoffs. I think where I've seen the most injuries in kickoff situations is where they do that huddle onside kick.
Mm-hmm.
And that could maybe be eliminated. I think, I mean, that's just like two groups going suicide against each other. But a regular, on most of, I haven't seen, since they've eliminated where you can block below the waist, I haven't seen any big injuries on kickoffs. So I'd say no, keep that.
If you could pick one football coach from the past to learn from, who would it be?
Oh, wow. God. So many. And I've heard some of them speak. Like I mentioned, when I first started, I was fortunate enough to hear Darrell Royal and Bill Yeoman speak. They did, you know, they were very open on what they were doing and weren't trying to hide anything. That was really interesting. If you could go way back, it'd be kind of neat to see, you know, somebody like, you know, the Rockne or Pop Warner way back and to those guys. And then the guys that are coaching now, you know, I'm fortunate. Michigan State's a short distance away. I can go over and talk with Mark D'Antonio and get some stuff from him or his staff. I'd like to talk with Clemson staff at some time. They do a lot of things that we do. You know, you can maybe pick up something from them. Auburn staff is real similar to some of the things we do also. So I don't know if there's just one. I'll say Newt Rockne, I guess, because that's an impossibility. So I'll say Newt Rockne.
Well, speaking of Clemson, how many teams should be included in the FBS playoff?
I don't know if they'll ever get it where it's right. I'd like to see them at least do eight if they could. I know they make so much money on the bowl games that they got to incorporate it somehow, probably with the bowls. But I'd like to see where they could do it with, you know, with eight. I think the top eight, then there wouldn't be a whole lot of complaining. I don't think you'd get all the right teams in. But, I mean, they do it at the lower levels. I mean, Division III, Division II, right, and Subdivision I are able to have it. I think they could do that. The excuses that they give you, I don't think hold water. You know, that they're concerned about the students' classes and that. Give me a break. I mean, that's not true. Or they wouldn't be doing some of the scheduling they're doing as it is right now. So. I'd like to see it to be eight. I think that would be a fair number for them.
Coach, all
and
things
still be able to keep the bowl games.
Excuse yeah, me. For sure. All things being equal, Coach, you run it or throw it?
Well, people thought they'd probably say we throw it. So I'll say that. We spend an awful lot of time in our passing game and have a lot of confidence in it. We chuck it around quite a bit. So I'd say we'd probably throw it.
Coach, good job on our two-minute drill. Here's the final question, and you've had a lot of success over the course of your career, but what's the one thing you'd point to as giving your team the winning edge?
You know, I don't know if this will answer the question, but I went back. This is about 10 years ago, but I went back and I looked at every team that I had that was at least 7-2 or better. You know, it had at least 7 wins, and I wanted to see if I could draw some kind of the answer. You know, that same question you asked me, what caused it to happen? And it was three things that were that all those teams had, and it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Each of those teams had one kid, at least maybe two, that were extremely fast. Speed was very important. They could either break a long touchdown or stop another team from making a long touchdown. So each of those teams, we're talking, you know, 40-some years, they had that. The other thing that they had was that academically, they were mostly very smart teams. So they were able to make adjustments, apparently. But as I looked at them and went through them, you know, yeah, those kids were all like National Honor Society kids or that type of thing. So they were smart teams. And the last one might be the most important, but you can't measure it, was that there was great team chemistry on each one of those teams. The kids pulled for each other. They worked hard together. There was, like you were talking about earlier, the practices were fun just because they liked each other as much as anything else, and the competition between each other was there, and they didn't care who got the glory and who didn't. You know, that chemistry is maybe the most important thing, but it's hard to measure. And I think that was those three things were the keys to the successful teams that I've had over the years.
Coach, how can our listeners connect with you?
My email is jahern 1212@gmail.com.
Coach, I really
happy to help anybody out. All the coaches, like I said, I think it's a great fraternity, and I don't think I've ever asked Coach for help that hasn't given me what he could. So I will be happy to help anybody I can.
Really appreciate you taking the time with us, Coach, and sharing what you've learned over your 49 years. I know our coaches will get a lot out of it, so thank you.
Hey, thank you for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.